Hello everyone, I'm delighted today. This is 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. I was at the Pearl down in Hill, Texas. Today is October 24, 2017, or it is Bull 5, 2021. We will start our first service here today with a song entitled Holler Brown. I'm pressing home the upward way, the heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as I'm on the down, yet that my feet on higher ground. Y'all lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's tableland, a higher plane than I've found, yet that my feet on higher ground. My heart has no desire to stay without survive and fears dismay. No sound may dwell where these abound, but where my aim is higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's table land. I have found, yet that my feet on higher ground. I want to live above the world, no Satan's darts that near hurl. For faith has caught the joyful sound, the song of saints on higher ground. Now lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's tableland, a higher plane than I have found, yet that my feet on higher ground. I want to scale the utmost high and catch a gleam of glory bright. But still I pray till heaven I found, yeah, lead me on to higher ground. Yeah, lift me up and let me stand, my faith on heaven's tableland, a higher plane than I have found, yeah, put my feet on higher ground. Part 4, 144,000 Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 34. And the topic is entitled Partial List of the Abominations in the Church, in the Seventh Day Adventist Church. So, it says that, Jeremiah 33, a scripture for prayer thought, verse 1. Over the word of Yahweh came unto Jeremiah the second time, while he was yet shut up in the court of the prison, saying, Thus saith Yahweh, the maker thereof, the Yahweh that formed it, to establish it. Yahweh is his name. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things thou knowest not. For thus saith Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, concerning the houses of this city, and concerning the houses of the kings of Judah, which are thrown down by the mount and by the sword. It come to fight with the Chaldeans, but it is to fill them with the dead bodies of men whom I have slain in mine anger and in my fury, and for all whose wickedness I have hid my face from this city. Behold, I will bring it health and cure, and I will cure them and will travail unto them, reveal unto them the abundance of the peace and the truth. That's what we're asking for today. Yahweh revealed unto us the abundance of the peace and the truth. Verse 7. And I will cause the captivity of Judah and the captivity of Israel to return, and will build them as at the first. Now let's go now with a partial list of the abominations in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Number 1. The lack of reverence in the house of Yahweh, Isaiah 56:7. following the fashions of the world, Isaiah 3:16. Spending money for that which is not bread, parentheses, health reform, Isaiah 55:2. Number four, use of the tithe, school teachers, those who teach the scriptures, are not paid by the tithe as they should have been. Volume 6, page 215 by Ellen G. White. Number 5, the house of Yahweh is made into a house of merchandise by buying and selling denominational publications of all sorts. Isaiah 58:3, Isaiah 56:7. Number 6, high prices in our institutions while they should be below current expenses. Volume 8, page 142, Isaiah 56:12, and Isaiah 58. Number 7, disbelieve in the spirit of prophecy. If not acknowledged by words, it is admitted by works. Number 8, fail to inform church members of the Elijah's message. Malachi 4:5. Testimonies Ministers, page 475. And volume 4 of the Testimonies, page 402 and 403. Number 9. Abraham obeyed Yahweh and all that he commanded, and was very careful even to the smallest particulars. Thus it was counted unto him for righteousness. But we have not done so. See Genesis 26:5 and Genesis 15:6. Number 10, the promise of the land, heavenly Canaan, is unto Abraham's seed. For Yahshua said, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. If you are not the children of Abraham, you are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. See John 8:39-44. By doing the works of Abraham, then are ye Abraham's seed, and heirs according to the promise, Galatians 3:29. Number 11, insisting that we have all the truth and have need of nothing. Number 12, turning down scriptural claims without the investigation as to its light. Volume 5, page 211. The abominations for which the faithful ones were sighing and crying were all that could be discerned by the finite eye. But by far the worst sin, those which provoked the jealousy of the pure and holy Yahweh, were unrevealed. With this sealing continued to the close of probation. The sealing of 144,000 cannot extend unto the close of probation. So it must be sealed long before that time. And it must close before the loud cry of the third angel's message. This is true. It's got to close under the fourth angel, the sealing angel. And that's Revelation 7:4. And because the 144,000, they're the ones that leads out in the taking the loud cry, as Revelation 18:1, that lightens the whole earth with his glory to all the Gentile nation. So it says, I saw angels hurrying. See, it must, early writings, page 277 says, I saw angels hurrying to and fro in heaven, descending unto the earth, and again ascending into heaven, preparing for the fulfillment of some important event. And I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend to the earth, to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto this his message. Great power and glory are imparted unto the angel. And as he descended, the earth was lightened with his glory. Alright, now, this is the same angel as that fourth angel. This is the fourth angel was Yahshua coming to the earth to bring the sealing message and to bring the seal of Yahweh. He came and sealed the 144,000, and he went back to heaven. Went back to heaven. And then when it come time to direct the work to the Gentiles, then he comes back down. He's the fifth angel. Okay. So if Yahshua is the fourth and fifth angel, then whenever he came in 1844 to fulfill the prophecy of the 2300 day prophecy, and he came to the Ancient of Days, he came to the most holy place where the Father was sitting upon his throne. That was the angel. And what angel did he represent? What message did he represent? He represented the cleansing of the sanctuary that William Miller taught about, of the first and second angel. He said Babylon is falling, and he climbed to cleanse the sanctuary. And so it was a third angel's message, a call for the cleansing of the sanctuary. Because what did the third angel say after the sanctuary was cleansed? Don't go back now and take the mark of the beast. You've been delivered from the mark of the beast because your sins have been blotted out. I've started a new movement. So that was Yahshua coming to the Ancient of Days, and Daniel 7, 9, 10, 11. So Yahshua represents all five of those angels' messages. He's the head of all five of those angels' messages. Because you go to Revelation 14, it talks about five angels' messages right there. And when you go to Revelation 14, 14 and 15 and on, it talks about two angels closing. It talks about two angels, harvest angels. Revelation 14, 14 on through the end of that chapter. It talks about two harvest angels. Those harvest angels are Yahshua. Harvesting first, 144,000. Harvesting second, the great multitude. He's in charge of it. Okay? All right, it says, then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend to the earth to unite his voice with the third angel. Okay? But he united his voice with the third angel's message and give power and force unto his message. Great power and glory were imparted to the angel, and as he descended, the earth was lightened with his glory. This message seemed to be in addition to the third message. It seems, in the expression, the angels hurrying to and fro, the author has reference to the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9, and then follows the mighty angel of the loud cry of Revelation 18:1. Ezekiel 9 cannot meet its fulfillment at the time Yahshua comes in the clouds, for the slaughter is in the church. The church of Yahshua must be pure and clean, free from every stain, long before Yahshua comes. If we are not in this pure condition, we cannot hope to stand the time of the trouble, nor can we escape the effects of the plague. The church cannot stand without an intercessor after probation, nor before. If there is one unclean thing in the camp of Israel, for thus saith Yahweh Elohim of Israel, there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you. Joshua 7:13. As an illustration and comparison of the faithfulness and unity of the people at the time of the trouble during the plagues, we quote early writings, page 282 and 3. I saw the saints leaving the cities and villages and associating together in company and living in the most solitary places. Angels provided them food and water while the wicked were suffering from their hunger and thirst. And I saw the leading men of the earth consulting together and Satan and his angels busy around them. I saw a writing, copies of which were scattered in different parts of the land, giving orders that unless the saints should yield their peculiar faith, give up the Sabbath, and observe the first day of the week, the people were at liberty after a certain time to put them to death. But angels in the form of men of war fought for them. Satan wished to have the privilege of destroying the saints of the Most High, but Yahshua bade his angels watch over them. Next came the multitude of the angry, wicked, and next a mass of evil angels spurring on the wicked to slay the saints. But before they could approach Elohim's people, the wicked must first pass this company of mighty holy angels. This was impossible, for the angels of Yahweh are causing them to recede, and also causing the evil angels who were pressing around them to fall back. It is evident here that Yahweh's people are apart by themselves, with no wicked ones among them. Holy angels would not protect unholy people from the wicked multitude. Here we see Yahweh's people separate from all wickedness. Therefore, this shows they are in perfect unity at the time they leave the villages. When then was this purification of the church? Ezekiel 8 tells us of the abomination done in the midst of Jerusalem. Ezekiel 9 reveals the consequences. Unto those who do not sigh and cry for all the abominations, one sinner may diffuse darkness that will exclude the light of Yahweh from the entire congregation. Volume 3, page 265. Five men follow the one. The men with the slaughter weapons must immediately follow the one with the rider's acorn. Yahweh must separate his people if the marking is to be of any value. And except the separation takes place, the outpouring of the Holy Spirit cannot fall in its fullness upon the people of Yahweh. I asked the meaning of the shaking I had seen, and was shown that it would be caused by the straight testimony called forth by the counsel of the true witness unto the letter sin. This will have its effect upon the heart of the receiver, and it will lead him to exalt the standard and pour forth the straight truth. Some will not bear this straight testimony. They will rise up against it, and this is what will cause a shaking among Yahweh's people. I asked what had made this great change. An angel answered, "It is the latter rain, the refreshing from the presence of Yahweh, the loud cry of the third angel." Early Romans, page 27. It is clear that the shaking must take place before the loud cry. For the men with the slaughter weapons are already slain before the man with the rider's acorn returned to report the matter, that he had done as he was commanded. See Ezekiel 9, 8, and 11. Okay, it says, distinction between the 144,000 and other saints. Referring to Israel as the flesh, which is a type of the true Israel, namely, the 144,000, Yahweh said, "Israel is my firstborn." The priesthood in ancient Israel was supposed to be made up of the firstborn of every family. Therefore, the priesthood is termed the firstborn. Had Israel obeyed Yahweh and all his precepts, this plan would have been carried out. But when they reached Mount Sinai, they made the golden calf and worshipped it. When Moses came down from the mountain, he took a record of all who had worshipped the calf. Standing in the gate of the camp, Moses called unto the people, "Who is on the Yahweh side? Let him come unto me." Those who had not joined in the apostasy were to take their position at the right of Moses. Those who were guilty but repentant at the left. Command was obeyed. It was found that the tribe of Levi had taken no part in the idolatrous worship. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 324. For this reason, Yahweh honored the tribe of Levi. For we read on page 277. After the institution of the tabernacle service, Yahweh showed unto himself the tribe of Levi for the work of the sanctuary, instead of the firstborn of the people. But Yahweh said, Israel is my firstborn. The true Israel, the 144,000 that promised, then would find its fulfillment here. Of them we read, being the first fruits unto Yahweh and the Lamb. And if such is the case, then the 144,000 would be priests and Levites. Isaiah 61 could have no reference to another class than Israel by the promise, the 144,000. And of the Gentiles, who shall come unto Yahweh by their labors. For we read in Isaiah 6:19-20, and I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nation. They shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto Yahweh out of all nations. 844,000 who escaped the ruin of Ezekiel 9 and Isaiah 63, and of which Isaiah 6:16-17 referred, will be sent on a great missionary work during the time of the last trial. We read in Isaiah 61:5-6, and strangers, Gentiles, are those who are not of the 144,000 shall stand and feed your flock. And the sons of the alien shall be your plowmen and your vine dresser, but you shall be named the priests of Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of Elohim. You shall eat the riches of Gentiles, and in their glory shall ye boast yourselves. Others in themselves, 144,000, shall feed their flock, and dress their vines, do their farming in the same manner as it was with the tribe of Levi, for they had no land. Though the Levites had no inheritance of the land, they received about 25% of the increase in the tithes and offering. Thus others in themselves did their work. So with 144,000 who will be priests in the new era, the idea here is not that tithe and offerings from the people would be their support in the earth made new. These scriptures are merely given to illustrate the position which they occupy. Let me tell you, the 144,000 are brought forth here, and before probation closes, because they have a work to do, and they're going to have money. And so, yeah, there's going to be gold and silver in abundance that's going to be given that they're going to use. All right, Isaiah 61:7 says, for your shame you shall have double, and for confusion they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore in their land they shall possess the double. Everlasting joy shall be unto them, having two problems. Ye and they, their pronoun, ye receives double for their shame, but the pronoun they shall possess the land. Ye is the pronoun of the second person unto whom Yahweh is speaking, and in this case refers to Israel, which is the 144,000. This is the Israel by the promise. Now keep that in mind. And Israel means that title can only be given to a people that's purified. Of the Hebrews. But the pronoun they refers unto the Gentiles, who were not numbered among the 12 tribes, and therefore are not included in the 144,000, but are saved, for they rejoice in their portion. In volume 5, page 475, it says, speaking of the 144,000, we read, they are to be as kings and priests unto Yahweh. These are they which follow the Lamb wheresoever he goeth. Therefore, the 144,000 are priests, and Yahshua the high priest and king. It may be said that when probation closes, Yahshua takes off his priestly garment and is priest no longer. But there need be no confusion in this, for we read in Isaiah 6:22-23, for as a new heaven and the new earth which I will make shall remain before me, saith Yahweh, so shall your seed and your name remain, and it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith Yahweh. Thus we see that there is to be a system of the worship in the new heaven and earth, which will require priests and Levites. Okay. But people don't realize that when the earth is restored, which is in the process of being restored right now, believe it or not, while the disasters are taking their toll and destroying much of the world, you also got a restoration going on. And so when this takes place, 144,000 are going to occupy this new earth restored for to bring in the harvest. And once they bring in the harvest, get all the resurrections take place, and then everyone is taken from this planet and it's destroyed. Or it's left to wander for 1,000 years through the earth. It passes away. It passes away through the without the sun, the moon, on its cycle, and it'll have no living species on it except Satan and his angels. Okay. So anyway, that ends subject matter on the 144,000, section 1. Now we'll go to section chapter 2, and we'll continue on with the 144,000 and the four classes of the redeemed. And we're dealing with that now in the section 2. It says, the ensuing study is given to prove that the great multitude of the Revelation 7-9 are living saints, who, with the 144,000, are to be translated at the second coming of Yahshua. All the saved in the history of the world, from the righteous Abel to the pillars of probation, are divided into four groups, four great, separate and distinct classes, as follows. Class 1, 144,000, Revelation 7, namely the 12 tribes of the Israel of the Promise, a special company with a special experience. Class 2, the translated at the coming of Yahshua, in the cloud, the great multitude, Revelation 7-9. Class 3, the millions of all ages who were martyred for their faith. Class 4, those who were once zealous in the cause of the Satan, but who plucked as branch from the burning, had followed their faith with a deep, intense devotion, Great Controversy, page 665. Early earthly nations and governments, glory and the splendid order of their armies and their uniforms are made according to rank, so that by the uniform one can recognize the rank of a soldier and under which division or regiment he belongs. We must not suppose the great Elohim has less order for his redeemed than the earthly nations for their armies. We know Yahweh had far better orders than any earthly government can ever devise, and endeavors shall be made to prove that each one of the four classes mentioned above has a uniform by which they can be discerned and classified. This is true. We know that Yahweh has a far better order than any earthly government can ever devise. And believe it or not, Yahweh called his servant Brother Johnson and said, set up the kingdom with the sanctuary restored using the creation calendar and the correct time for the keeping the perfect order of the sanctuary, and teach my people my government. Well, there's a government of heaven right here on earth, commissioned unto an earthly angel. A fallible human being was given this privilege to set up the kingdom of heaven here on earth. He was the firstborn. But you notice that Yahweh didn't use the firstborn to take over the priesthood at the Kadesh Barnea when they rebelled that day when Moses went up into the mount and came back down. They had rebelled. Only the tribe of Levi didn't rebel, so he used them for the priesthood from that point on, and he bypassed the firstborn. Brother Johnson was the firstborn in 1970, and so therefore he didn't bypass him. He gave him the privilege of setting up his government. And Brother Johnson set it up. And then he trampled it underfoot. He mocked it. He trampled it underfoot. And so Yahweh's order was not perfected here on earth with Brother Johnson. It says right here, it says that we know Yahweh has a far better order than any earthly government can ever devise. Well, Brother Johnson devised heaven's government after heaven's order with heaven giving the directions and the information how to set it up and operate it with the divinely ordained system of true worship and the daily as the heartbeat of the sanctuary. That was all given to Gilead Center. And they didn't know what they had. They didn't appreciate what they had. And that's when they couldn't hold on to it. So it says the class one, in early writings, page 16, we read, here on the sea of glass, the 144,000 stood in a perfect square. Some of them had very bright crowns. Others not so bright. Some crowns appeared heavy with stars, while others had but few. All were perfectly satisfied with their crowns. And they were all clothed with a glory white mantle from their shoulders to their feet. The 144,000 described as having this glorious white mantle as part of their garment. Class 2 are the translated beside the 144,000. Revelation 7:9 says, after this, the 144,000, I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man could number of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. It will be noticed this company had palms in their hands. Class 3, early writings, page 18 and 19. As we were traveling along, we met a company who also were gazing at the glories of the place. I noticed red as a border on their garments. Their crowns were brilliant. Their robes were pure white. As we greeted them, I asked Yeshua who they were. He said they were martyrs. They had been slain for him. With them was an innumerable company of little ones. They also had a hem of red on their garments. Thus, class 3, the martyrs, are described as having red on their garments. Class 4. Great sinners plucked his brands from the burning, but who died a natural death. These have neither a mantle over their shoulders, palms in their hands, nor red as a border around their garments. But they do have crowns of gold. Their crowns differ from the crowns of the 144,000. The latter have stars in their crowns, as stated, under heading number class 1. Thus we have the description of these four classes and the symbols of their garments, and can be summarized as follows. Class 1, the 144,000, have a glorious white mantle and stars in their crowns. Class 2, the great multitude, Revelation 7:9, have palms in their hands. Class 3, the millions of all ages who were martyred have red around their garments as a border. Class 4, great sinners plucked as brands from the burning, but who died a natural death, who have white robes and golden crowns, but no stars on their crown. Same as those of Revelation 4:4. There must have been a definite reason for describing the special uniforms, which must have been for the purpose of disclosing this truth. Types and antitypes. The Spirit of Prophecy says Elijah represents those who will be living when Yeshua comes. Okay, so now I represent the antitypical Elijah, David, with his message. So therefore, that we're in that time then of Yahshua's imminent second coming. And he changed and be changed in a twinkling of an eye and be translated. Zohar of Ages, page 421. For the Elijah who had been translated to heaven without seeing death represented those who will be living upon the earth at the Yahshua's second coming, and who will be changed in a moment in the twinkling of an eye at the last trump. References made of the Enoch and the Patriarchs and Prophets, pages 88 and 89. For the righteous character of this prophet represents the state of the holiness, which must be attained by those who shall be redeemed from the earth at the time of Yahshua's second advent. But like Enoch, Yahweh's people will seek for purity of heart and conformity unto his will until they shall reflect the likeness of Yahshua. Like Enoch, they will warn the world of the Yahshua's second coming and of the judgments to be visited upon the transgression, and by their holy conversation, an example, they will condemn the sins of the unrighteous, as Enoch was translated to heaven before the destruction of the world by water, so the living righteous will be translated from the earth before its destruction by the fire. So Elijah represents those who shall be translated to the second coming of Yahshua, and it does too. Both men were translated without seeing death. The question is, why two types? Because there are two companies of people to be translated, the 144,000 and the great multitude of Revelation 7-9. The 144,000 are Israelites. The great multitude are not. Enoch is not an Israelite. Therefore, he cannot represent Israel, the 144,000. The name Israel did not come into existence until the time of Jacob, which was many centuries after Enoch was translated. A clearer explanation on this subject will be given in another section. We shall determine which class Enoch represents by the uniformly words. Early writing, page 40, says, "There I saw a good old Enoch, who had been translated. On his right arm, he bore a glorious palm, and on each leaf was written victory." Here we see Enoch, too, has a palm in his hand, the same as the great multitude of class number 2. Enoch is said to be the seventh from Adam. The seven means complete, finished. This perfectly typifying the class represented by him in Revelation 7-9, the great multitude. We shall endeavor to bring another proof that the great multitude with the palms in their hands are translated with the 144,000. The Great Controversy, page 665. We read about class 2, 3, and 4. The part referring to class 4 reads as follows. Nearest the throne are those who were once zealous in the cause of Satan, but who plucked his brands from the burning, have followed their Savior with deep, intense devotion. Next are those who perfected Christian characters in the midst of the falsehood and infidelity. Those who honored the law of Yahweh when the Christians world declared his Lord. Here is included every possible sin to a sinner in all ages who have taken their stand for Yahweh. But of class 2, the great multitude, there is no reference given as to what kind of sinners they are. Class 1, the 144,000 are called Israel, a special company with a special experience. Come on. After excluding every possible sin for a sinner in the class 4, those who shall be resurrected and the martyrs in class 3, inspiration says, and beyond is the great multitude with the white robes and palms in their hands. Therefore, this company could not be classed with the other two or with the 144,000. If class 2, the great multitude, for the saved and resurrected from all ages, and all of the saved must have palms in their hands. But as it is plain that not all have the palms, and these are not all the same in all ages, but are the translated ones only, besides the 144,000. The palm is a symbol of victory over death and the grave. That is, they never died. Again, speaking of the same company, we read in Revelation 7:14, last part. And he said unto me, these are they which came out of great tribulation, and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Thus this company went through the tribulation of Daniel 12, which is in the time of the seven last plagues, Revelation 7:16, last part. Neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. They go through the fourth plague, so it is clear that this company lives in the time of the end, at the second advent of Yahshua, to be translated. An explanation of the early writings, page 15. Speaking of the announcement made of the coming of Yahshua, the day and the hour, which is before the general resurrection, and at the time of the special resurrection, we read, soon we heard the voice of Yahweh like many waters, which gave us the day and hour of the Yahshua's coming. The living saints, 144,000 in the number, knew and understood the voice, while the wicked thought it was thunder and an earthquake. When Yahweh spoke the time, he poured upon us the Holy Spirit, and our faces began to light up and shine with the glory of the Yahweh, as Moses did when he came down from the Mount Sinai. For the 144,000 were all sealed and united perfectly. On their foreheads is written, Yahweh knew Jerusalem, and a glorious star containing Yahshua's new name. At our happy holy state, the wicked were enraged and which rushed violently up to lay hands on us to thrust us into prison, when we would stretch forth the hand in the name of the Yahweh, and they would fall helpless to the ground. We are not to understand that all who were present at this time and heard the announcement made of the day and the hour were the 144,000 only, for the language used made it clear that there were more, for the pronouns we, us, they, and our are used. In pointing to the 144,000, the definite article thee is used. She does not put herself as one of the 144,000, but instead the pronoun us is used. Therefore, there must be another company living besides the 144,000. Elijah represents the 144,000. If Enoch represents the great multitude of Revelation 7:9, then Elijah represents the 144,000. For only two in the world's history have been translated without seeing death. Further proof is not necessary, however. Other reasons shall be given why Elijah typified the 144,000. Elijah saw the drought and the famine in Israel, so will the 144,000. For we read in the Great Controversy, Page 649. They have seen the earth wasted with the famine and pestilence, the sun having power to scorch men with great heat. Elijah had a mantle over his shoulders, 2 Kings 2:8. Likewise, the 144,000 had a mantle, and they were all clothed with a glorious white mantle from their shoulders to their feet. Early writings, page 17. Quoting from the Testimony of the Ministers, page 475, prophecy must be fulfilled. Yahweh says, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah, and when he appears, men may say, you are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message. Sister White does not mean to say that she is that prophet Elijah, but plainly says a prophet must come, and it is said to be a prophet with the same spirit and power of Elijah. This prophet must come before Ezekiel 9 is fulfilled, for the prophecy of Ezekiel is similar unto Elijah's experience with Israel in the days of Ahab. Elijah's work in the days of Ahab, king of Israel, were to prove to Israel that they had apostatized, and after doing so, he took the priest or prophet and cut their heads off and threw them in the brook. Such was the spirit and power of the Elijah. For reading the Testimonies of Ministers, page 445, this sealing of the servants of Yahweh, the 144,000, Revelation 7, is the same that was shown to Ezekiel in the vision. Then the sealing of the 144,000 is the same as Ezekiel 9. And the marking by the man with the writer's ink horn is the seal. As soon as the marking is done, the five men with the slaughter weapons go after him and slay both old and young, both maids and little children and women, and they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. It is at this time that the 144,000 are marked. Our seal, Ezekiel 9, fits Elijah's experience for this reason. The prophet or the message is called Elijah, with the spirit and power of Elijah. The prophet Elijah thought all Israel had apostatized and that he alone was left, but Yahweh said he had 7,000 men that had not bowed the knee to Baal. 7 signifies a complete or perfect number, which stands as a symbol. In this instance, meaning a complete number of thousands. The complete number of the very elect is 144,000. So we too, like Elijah, think the whole church has drifted into the world, bowed and knee to Baal. Thus Elijah stands as the type of the 144,000 living, translated saints. Moses, type of the resurrection of the just. Moses upon the Mount of the Transfiguration was a witness unto Yahshua's victory over sin and death. He represented those who shall come forth from the grave at the resurrection of the just. Isaiah of Ages, page 421. Moses represents the first or general resurrection of Revelation 20, verse 6. Type of the special resurrection. If the Moses represents the general resurrection, who then would represent the mixed or special resurrection of Daniel 12, 2? We have the one of Matthew 27:52-53. And the graves were open, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose and came out of the graves after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared unto many. The saints who had part in this resurrection were gathered from all ages, some who perhaps had lived at the very time Yahshua was preaching and were acquainted with him and his work were witnesses unto his resurrection. Read early writings, page 184. Isaiah of Ages, page 786. There is still another reason why Matthew 27:53 is a type of this mixed resurrection. Those who were resurrected with the Yahshua witnessed the deity of the Yahshua unto the very ones who crucified him. Speaking of this mixed resurrection, Daniel said, "And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt." Then there will be some righteous intruder who lived and witnessed the crucifixion. Also those who crucified him and pierced him. For Revelation 1:7, "Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him." Therefore the resurrection was witness of the power of Yahweh unto these murderers of his son, typified the just who are raised in the mixed special resurrection. The type of the second resurrection. The wicked who come up in the mixed resurrection of Daniel 12:2, and who must die the second death at the coming of Yahshua, typify the ones who come up at the end of the millennium, called the resurrection of the wicked. Read the Great Controversy, pages 661 and 662. Early writings, page 52 and 53. So that's a type and antitype right there. Type of the second death. It has been a perplexing question whether the wicked ones who arise in the special resurrection of Daniel 12:2 continue to live or die with the living wicked at the second coming of the Yahshua and be resurrected at the end of 1,000 years. As Yahweh leaves nothing undone, he has foretold everything in the prophecy and types as well. If we have a type for every other event, we must have a type of this. The wicked ones who are resurrected must die, and the rest, with the rest of the wicked at the coming of Yahshua, and the clouds that typify the second death at the end of the millennium. Now, the question is, will they arise again in the second resurrection with the wicked? And answer to this question, early writing, page 293 says, at the first resurrection, all come forth in immortal bloom. But at the second, the marks of the curse are visible on all. The kings and noblemen of the earth, the mean and low, the learned and unlearned, come forth together. All behold the Son of Man, and those very men he despised and mocked him, who put the crown of thorns upon his sacred brow, and smote him with the reed. Behold him in all his kingly majesty, those who spit upon him in the hour of his trial, and now turn from his piercing gaze and from the glory of his countenance, those who drove the nails through his hands and feet, now look upon the marks of his crucifixion, those who thrust the spear into his side, behold the marks of their cruelty on his body. By this we understand that these very men are there again in the second resurrection. Therefore they were resurrected the second time at the end of the 1,000 years to die in the second death, which they themselves typified by dying the second death with the living wicked at the second coming of Yahshua in the cloud. Thus we have a prophecy and a type for every event that has or will take place in this wicked world of ours. A thought of perfection, number 1-7. The resurrection of the Moses, number 2. The resurrection of the time when Yahshua rose, number 3. The special resurrection of Daniel 12:2, number 4. The first resurrection of Revelation 20:6, number 5. The translation of Enoch, number 6. The translation of Elijah, number 7, the general translation at the coming of Yahshua. Thus we again have the number 7, the sign of perfection. All are finished. The 4 resurrections and 3 translations comprise all the saints resurrected and translated, all of which make a total of 7, or the end procession of the redeemed. What a wonderful parade it will be when the redeemed of all ages shall march through the golden streets and the heavenly places amid the pure and the blessed. Escorting the great procession, we see the millions of angels who ministered unto the redeemed in all ages. Number 2, Moses, the type of the resurrection, the first man to write in the Bible, we see marching ahead as the leader of the resurrection one, clothed in white and a glittering golden crown on his head. For the resurrected ones whom he represents are cast 4, clad in the white robes and having golden crowns. Number 3, next we see good innocent Abel, representing the martyrs, with a glorious white robe and red around his garment, as he bore it, leading millions of the martyrs of all ages. Class 3, whose robes are just like the one worn by the leaders, Abel. Number 4, we now behold good old Enoch, having around his head a dazzling white wreath, above it a lovely crown brighter than the sun, and on his right arm a glorious palm. It is by him that the great translated multitude are both led and represented, all in the pure white robes, palms in their hands, and golden crowns on their heads. It says, number 5, last of all the redeemed, the brave Elijah, with a glorious white mantle from his shoulders to his feet, a type and leader of the most wonderful coming, though small in number, being a special company with a special strength, a royal priesthood, 144,000, and the pure white and the glorious mantle from their shoulders to their feet, with stars in their crown, Revelation 14:5, and in their mouth was found no gall, for they are without fault before the throne of Yahweh. Number six, if the sons of Yahweh Adam from other worlds present themselves for Yahweh according to Job 1:6 in a council meeting, then surely the sons of Yahweh Adam from all the worlds would be not be excluded from the most wonderful and the only procession in the eternity's endless expanse. Number seven, last of all, Yahshua in the majestic heavenly throne with 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of angels. What a wonderful getting that would be. Can we find anything more harmonious than this in all the Bible? It will be. Notice we again have the complete biblical number seven, and it cannot be made more or less and yet include all. Ought this not to wake up our interest and zeal when we see what a glorious event is in the store for Yahweh's faithful people? An explanation of the writer's inkhorn of early writings, page 279. For the man of the writer's inkhorn of Ezekiel 9 is the one who performs the sealing of the 144,000 long before the close of probation. Some may misunderstand the statement made in the early writings and thereby be confused. For the benefit of such a one, we make this explanation, quoting the statement found in the early writings, page 279, we read, I saw angels hurrying to and fro in heaven, an angel with a writer's inkhorn by his side, returned from the earth, and reported unto Yahshua that his work was done, and the saints were numbered and sealed. Then I saw Yahshua, who had been ministering before the ark, containing the Ten Commandments, throw down the censer. He raised his hands and with a loud voice said, it is done. It is unmistakably plain that it was an angel with a writer's inkhorn and that his work was done. Also that Yahshua's work was finished. In the heavenly sanctuary probation code, because this angel has a writer's inkhorn by his side, same as the man in the Ezekiel 9. There's no proof that it is the same angel, for it may be supposed that there would be more than one angel with such an instrument. However, it may be the same sealing angel in both instances. But the thought is, when the man of the Ezekiel 9 seals the 144,000, his work continues on to the harvest time. The saints must be numbered and sealed in this generation, the same as those who have been sealed in the ages past. Evidently, his work has been continuing ever since sin entered into the human family, perhaps beginning with Abel, and would continue unto the close of probation, at which time his work would be done. Okay, this brings the end of our study. This is our contest. This is the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archives to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. Lead Me to the Rock by the Elijah Davis song that I've written. I need to see the rock that is higher than mine, I'll forever be. And dedicated to the sons of everyone who came to sin and free. For the life and the thrill I have to live this by the stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain is never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than none. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to the mansion in the sky. A man on a mission came to this world, sort of on the slum. Born in a manger and scarcely a stranger could be seen passing by. Oh, the moon shone bright with the heavenly lights of all the starry hosts. For the brightest one of them all is the one that marred them most. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's hard and not. Lead me to the place of the sacred feet. Lead me to the land of the sky. Short point to them before you. and dry. Vanquished forever and left to die. Rather, lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that is hard and nigh. Lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's high and high. Lead me to the place of the sable speed, lead me to those mountains in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mountains in the sky.